All right, we're shifting into high gear because we're heading to the closing bell in roughly 2 minutes, 20 seconds to help us get there. Eric Lynch, Managing Director of Scharf Investments, and Rebecca Felton, Riverfront Investment Group. Good to have you both here. Rebecca, let me start with you. You point out that persistence used to have a good connotation, but not when it pertains to the unwanted side effects from the pandemic. What do you mean by that, especially from an investment standpoint?
Well, thank you for having me. And I think so many of us have gotten tired of hearing the word persistent as it relates to inflation. You know, we had come into the inflation scare thinking that everything was going to be transitory, and now it's getting called persistent more than it is transitory. And I think that's got a lot of folks spooked, particularly as the Delta variant cases continue to rise, and there are just more and more anxieties as we look at across the market at a time when valuations are already quite extended.
And Eric, real quick, you mentioned that you think we're already mid-cycle. What does that mean practically from an investment standpoint?
Yeah, thank you. Mid-cycle just means it's time to roll out a new playbook, right? The playbook from the last year has been a risk-on strategy. That's what happens off of contractions of the severity that we saw. And cyclicals have run. Once rate of economic growth peaks, and we're seeing this in PMI figures, we're seeing this in the 10-year treasury yield peaking earlier, we're seeing the retail sales figures. Once that rate of growth peaks, so even though it's still growing, but that rate is slowed down going forward, you have a transition in the marketplace historically from cyclicals to defensives. And we've already seen that starting to happen the last several weeks.
All right, Eric, and everybody, Rebecca, just stand by because we're going to count down to the closing bell, taking a look where markets look as if they'll finish up. You can see we have moved further to the downside, especially the Dow. At one point, it was only off by about 60 points, now approaching off 400 points. S&P 500 off 50 points, and the NASDAQ off about 137 points. Some of the laggards on the Dow today, Chevron, Apple, International Business, Amgen and Caterpillar. But one of the gainers today on the Dow includes Home Depot. And we had their earnings yesterday, but investors were not pleased with their guidance, but they're recovering today. Here's the closing bell.
All right, and that is the closing bell this Wednesday, August 18th. We're seeing markets closing in the red today, both the S&P 500 and Dow posting a back-to-back day of declines. And taking a look at some of the sector performance here, consumer discretionary, the only sector in the S&P 500 in the green, whereas we have energy, healthcare, and information technology, the laggards on the day. We'll want to turn it back over to our panel. And Rebecca, as we look at some of the economic data that we've gotten recently, of course, housing starts disappointing this morning, the FOMC meeting minutes, what should investors really be looking for as we head into the next month's data that's going to really start reflecting the Delta variant impact? What are some of the concerns on that front?
Well, Emily, I think you make a very good point. We certainly have had somewhat of a seesaw as it relates to the intermittent data points. The housing numbers this week weren't what were expected, but a lot of that had to do with the fact that there's a lack of supply. The demand was not necessarily the issue. Retail sales, a lot of the issue there was in motor vehicles. Again, lack of supply, but yet if you look at the industrial production numbers, the best part of industrial productions was in motor vehicles. So perhaps some of the supply shortages that we have been experiencing, we're going to be working through. Again, the increase in cases potentially throws a monkey wrench in that. We are still risk on. We've taken a barbell approach to it. So we are following our process rather than the headlines right now.
When we talk about following headlines, Eric, I hear a lot of people raising concern about Delta variant. I have other analysts who've come on who've told us that, you know, S&P 500, 5,000 is still in the works. How do you, what do you say to your clients or to your peers when they have that discussion? I know we're all trying to be fortune tellers.
Right. You know, it's difficult to understand what the puts and takes of the Delta variant are. But if you look at, you know, the preliminary indications, Walmart, for example, Target, they cited very de minimis traffic impacts from the increases of the variant. They're over indexed to the areas of the U.S. that have seen a higher prevalence of COVID cases. So I do think that, you know, for better or for worse, U.S. society is learning to live with the with COVID. So I think really going forward, it's more, I think, important for investors to start thinking about, you know, what's been working, you know, the last year and a half, what's going to work going forward. And I think this this rotation into qualities mid-cycle, historically, that's when it occurs, is going to be more of an operative element to investing going forward versus growth or value, et cetera.
And Rebecca, as we think about the policy front, especially on fiscal policy, with the infrastructure and reconciliation packages making their way through the Senate and the House, how are you thinking about the debates that are going to be happening in the next couple of weeks and what that might mean for the markets going forward?
Well, the expectation has been that we would see a tax increase, for example, with this reconciliation package. You know, that would be the pay for. But what we know has been happening in the last few days is you've had some consternation within the Democratic Party. Some of the moderate Democrats are balking at the price tag. And they're also saying that they don't want to vote for the reconciliation bill unless the bipartisan infrastructure bill is passed. And Speaker Pelosi has said just the opposite. So it looks like this is going to take a while to get through. Obviously, again, the big question becomes around taxes, but it looks like that's going to be a little ways off.
Rebecca, looking at crude oil, and we saw it fall today, a guest who joined us in the last hour talked about the fact that China is not processing quite as much. And you have talked about the problem with shipping in getting supplies here to the States or even finished product. Are we going to see some kind of perhaps permanent shift in global trade? Because it seems as if now, as we approach almost 2 years in lockdown, although we're not locked down, but you know where I'm going with it, that things won't go back to the kind of flow that we had before the pandemic.
Well, I think you bring up a very good point. I mean, right now, they're suggesting that we couldn't see maybe a return to normal in terms of the shipping, with containers being on one hemisphere and versus the other and needing to get to the opposite, that we wouldn't see that backlog clear until early 2022. You've had a few ports in China, I think, closed just this very week. So it makes sense that we would start seeing changes in terms of our trade patterns and where things were being manufactured. And I think we've already seen a little bit of that, but that is something that's going to take quite some time, as you know.
And Eric, as we think about the market going forward, are you seeing opportunities outside of U.S. equities and on a global basis, of course, with the Delta variant surge and the other variants? Does that pose a risk on that front as well?
It does. Clearly, you know, outside the U.S., the vaccination rate's still a little behind, but catching up, that is a concern. I think the opportunity, however, valuation-wise, is attractive overseas. You know, the U.S. and international markets disconnected valuation-wise in the last decade. That a lot of it was merited because the U.S. has grown faster. But nevertheless, there are some good readings globally. There are some great multinational companies. You know, we do like certain names out there. European stocks are getting a bid. You know, we like broadband worldwide. There's names out there like Grupo Televisa that's restructuring and doubling down on their broadband business. Gross margins are improving. So there are always opportunities overseas, especially with valuations more attractive than U.S.
And we got the announcement today, Eric, about ViacomCBS joining partners with Comcast. I mean, this is their business rival, but they're going to join ventures through Sky Showtime overseas. Are there going to be more opportunities? You can comment on that if you wish. I don't want to pin you down to any one specific stock, but ViacomCBS was up something like 5%. But are there going to be more of those kinds of deals where adversaries here in North America join forces in Europe?
I think so. I mean, this is a global media business. Borders are falling away. You can turn on Netflix and find, you know, native language, you know, production from various, you know, countries. And so this is really a worldwide arms race. And it's a fragmented industry that's consolidating, and they need this for scale.
Rebecca, one thing I want to ask is just about that supply and demand mismatch on the labor side. And we're hearing from airlines, for instance, just the overworking of a lot of the employees there, the service sector writ large. And what's your expectations for whether this is going to get worse before it gets better? Are we past this peak point of these supply and demand mismatches with labor scarcities?
I think the key will be, as we move into September, right, the extension of the unemployment benefits wear off. But you've also got schools starting back up in many locations. So many working parents who've had to stay home because of the school situation will be able to go back to work. So I think September is when we'll be able to get a better gauge of that.
You know, we're waiting, by the way, just want to let everybody know we're waiting on Robinhood earnings. We're going to have Inés Ferré join us in just a bit to talk about that. But Rebecca, This payment for order flow issue is something that raises the eyebrows of people who don't perhaps quite understand why that might actually work in favor of the retail investor. Is there an argument you could make that makes it easier for us to explain to others why this is not a bad business model?
I don't have an argument for it.
There are a lot of people who disagree with it, I understand. Eric, what about you? When we look at like a Robinhood and trading platforms like Robinhood that give the retail investor more access, what do you think? Are we going to see more of them pop up, or are they going to be a one and done?
Oh, I don't think so. I mean, I think the democratization of investing's, you know, been a long-term secular trend. Think about the lowering of commissions and the access and lower minimums and all sorts of progress that's been made. And the question is, you know, who can make money like any other industry? Who makes money? Who's got a competitive advantage and who sticks around? Robinhood's got first mover's advantage. They got a good brand. You know, I'm not so sure I agree with the investment style long term of a lot of its participants, but nevertheless, you know, that's outside of their business model. They're certainly growing.
Okay, I think we're going to say, look, Rebecca and Eric, stand by. Let's bring in Inez Ferrey to tell us what those Robinhood earnings are. You're muted there, Inez. Can you unmute, please? I think
here
we are
go.
Having an
here we go.
There we go.
So Robinhood second quarter loss coming in at $502 million. Total revenue coming in at $565 million. That actually was above what the street was expecting. Keep in mind that there are only three analysts covering right now the stock because of that quiet period after the IPO. Transaction-based revenue coming in at $451 million and monthly active users, 21.3 million. We're seeing the stock in after hours that's trading lower, down about 2%. I do want to mention, though, crypto transaction-based revenue coming in at $233 million. That's more than half of its total transaction-based revenue. And you can compare this from the second quarter of this year to the second quarter of 2020, when crypto transaction-based revenue was just $5 million. The company also saying that 60% of its customers traded crypto in Q2. So what analysts were expecting was to perhaps see a slowdown in equities trading, perhaps if crypto was going to fill that gap, if crypto trading would fill that gap. Also, what's very important is the earnings call, which will be in a little while. And it will be interesting because the company is taking questions from shareholders, individual shareholders, retail traders were able to submit questions to the company. And those that were upvoted the most would be answered by management. So the company really leaning into its retail user base, Adam.
All right. Thank you for that breakdown, Inez. And again, we are seeing shares of Robinhood moving lower by about 2% following that report. Want to go back to our panel now for some reaction on this. And Eric, as we think about Robinhood, the rise of the retail investor, a lot of strategists have been talking about their participation as one of the factors underpinning the market's rise earlier this year. Do you see that as being something contributing to equities moving forward?
Yeah, certainly the last year, I think it's had an outsized influence, given the kind of particular nuances of the pandemic with, you know, day traders at home, individuals getting stimulus checks, and there's definitely a correlation there. So, you know, I don't know if the same kind of ferocity of that growth will continue absent those two kind of conditions. But nevertheless, again, you know, this kind of gamification of trading and investing, which is just kind of fun. It's easily accessible off of your phone. You know, it's not happening just in, you know, fintech or investment apps like this, but across a host range of apps on our cell phones. So I don't think that trend is going anywhere.
All right, let's go to Jared Blickery, because he had teased us before the closing bell that he had some insight into Robinhood. Now we've seen the numbers. What is it, Jared?
Yeah, well, the third quarter projection, that warning, I think, is weighing on the stock right now. It's not a huge movement. I mean, Robinhood can move 70% in one day, as we saw several weeks ago. But I'm taken back to the I think it was last week or the week before, when the insiders wanted to sell shares after they got that huge, huge pop after Robinhood effectively became a meme stock. SEC said, no, you're going to have to wait out until after these earnings announcements are made for the current quarter. Now that we have this, they're going to go back to the SEC. They're going to update their S1 registration statement with these financials. If the SEC approves it, they'll be able to sell. But the question is, what price will the stock be at that point? It's not a bad report here. I was expecting a little bit worse here, just going through the headline numbers, the increase in monthly active users, even sequentially here. I thought it could have been a decline. So I'm going to say better than feared here on Robinhood.
Jared Blickery, we're going to get more from you after the break. We've got to say thank you to Eric Lynch, Managing Director of Scharf Investments. And Rebecca, I apologize for putting you on the spot on payment for order flow. For the record, not a fan at this end, but it's always a fascinating discussion, especially for people who live in the financial world. Rebecca Felton is Riverfront Investment Group. We appreciate you both being here.